The tour content from now through Lagba Omer has been generously sponsored by Malki M. Thank you, Malki. June is less than a month away, which means that I'll soon be transitioning into summer writing mode, with more Substack articles and fewer recorded shiurim. The bulk of these articles will remain free. However, if you would like to support my Torah and gain access to additional spicy written content, consider becoming a paid subscriber by going to rabbischneeweiss.substack.com and signing up today. Hello, I'm Rabbi Matt Schneeweiss, and this is the Stoic Jew Podcast, where we explore the relationship between Judaism and Stoicism. Today's reading is from Marcus Aurelius's Meditations, Book 5, Chapter 11. To what use am I now putting my soul? That's the question to ask yourself all the time. And you should interrogate yourself. At this moment, what is occupying that part of me they call the command center? What kind of soul do I actually have at the moment? Is it the soul of a child? A teenager, a woman, a tyrant, a farm animal, a wild animal? Okay, so because we are approaching Rosh Hashanah and the Aseret Yemei Teshuvah and Yom Kippurim, then when I read this, my mind immediately went to Teshuvah. And an idea occurred to me which might be a new way to approach the Aseret Yemei Teshuvah to get the most out of them. This is distinct and unrelated, to my knowledge, unrelated to the radical idea in Teshuvah that I wrote about on my Substack this past Friday on September 7th in my article, What Would Teshuvah Look Like If It Were Easy? Okay, so maybe the two ideas can be reconciled, but don't think that this has anything to do consciously with that idea. So in order to appreciate this, let us review what the Aseret Yemei Teshuvah are. And you know, there are many answers to this, but I'm going to present the one I'm most familiar with, which is the Rambam. And we're going to read a couple of Rambams together just to get the context. So in Hilchos Teshuvah, the Laws of Repentance, Chapter 3, he spends the first half of the chapter talking about how God judges the world, how God judges each one of us when we die, and how God judges the world on Rosh Hashanah. So I'm not going to present his whole system, but he says, Kishem sheshoklin avonos adam uzuchiyosav b'sha'as misaso, just as a person's iniquities are weighed against his merits on at the time of his death. Kach b'chol shana v'shana shoklin avonos kol echad v'echad min bayi ha'olam im zuchiyosav b'yom tov v'shav Rosh Hashanah. So too, each and every year, the iniquities of each and every one of the inhabitants of the world are weighed with their merits on the holiday of Rosh Hashanah. Mi shenimtza tzadik nechtam l'chaim, someone who is found to be righteous is sealed for life. Umi shenimtza rasha nechtam l'misa, someone who's sealed for who's found to be evil is sealed for death, or I guess guilty is sealed for death. V'habeinoni tolin lo ad yom kippurim, and someone who's in the middle hangs in the balance until Yom HaKippurim, until Yom Kippur. Im asa teshuva, if he did teshuva, nechtam l'chaim, then he is sealed for life. Im lav nechtam l'misa, and if not, then he's sealed for death. Okay, so that's the basic idea of the judgment, okay, and the significance of the 10 days. But then he goes and says two ideas, one about shofar and one about how you should view yourself all time, all year round, and then he returns to the 10 days of tshuva. He says, Alfa pishat kias shofar b'Rosh Hashanah gezeras ha-kasuv, even though the sounding of the shofar on Rosh Hashanah is a scriptural decree, meaning that it is not something that rationality dictates, it's something that is mandated by scripture, remez yesh bo, there is an allusion to an idea in it, klomar, meaning to say, it's as if it is saying, uru uru yishanim, yishanim mishinaschem, v'hikitsu nirdamim mitir d'maschem. Wake up, you sleepers from your sleep. Be roused, you deep sleepers from your deep sleep. V'chapsu b'maasechem, investigate your actions, v'chizru b'tshuva, and return in repentance, v'zichru borachem, and remember your creator. So then he breaks from the metaphor to explain what it's referring to. Elu hashochachim esa emes b'havle hazman. These are the people who forget truth or reality in the temporal vanities. V'shogim kol shenasim behevel v'rik asher lo yo'il v'lo yatzil. And they spend their entire year immersed in nothingness and emptiness that does not benefit or save. Habitu l'nafsho sechem. Look into your souls. V'hitivu darcheichem u'mal aleichem. And improve your ways and your actions. V'yazov kol echa mikem darko hara'a u'machashavtu asher lo tova. And each one of you abandon your way that is evil and your thought that is not good. So that's what the shofar is telling you. Wake up to the truth. Wake up to what you're immersed in for your whole year. And realize it doesn't benefit you, and do teshuva and remember your creator. Okay, then he goes on. He says, "Lefikach tzarich kol adam sheyire atzmo kol hashana kula k'ilu chetzio zakai v'chetzio chayev." Therefore, all year long, a person should see himself as though he's half exonerated and half liable. V'chein kol ha'olam chetzio zakai v'chetzio chayev. So too the entire world, half exonerated, half liable. Chata chid echad. If he sinned one sin, Then he tilts himself and the entire world to the side of liability, and he causes destruction for himself. Asa mitzvah achas, if he did one mitzvah, hari hechriya atma v'hechriya kol ha'olam kula l'kav zechus v'garan lahen teshuva v'hatzala. If he does one mitzvah, then he tilts himself and the entire world to the side of exoneration, and he causes for them salvation. Zehu shenemar, this is what it means in Mishlei 10:25 when it says, tzadik yisod olam, the righteous person is the foundation of the world. Ze shetzidek atmo hari hechriya kol ha'olam v'hitzila. This person who made himself righteous has tilted the entire world and saved it. Okay, then he goes back to the theme of the 10 days of Teshuvah. Umipnei inyan ze, nahagu kol beis Yisrael laharbos b'tzedaka uvmasim tovim v'lasok b'mitzvos mirosh hashana v'ad yom kippurim yeser mikol yomos hashana. Because of this idea, then the entire house of Israel is accustomed to increase in tzedakah, in charitable acts, and in good deeds, and to be involved in mitzvos from Rosh Hashanah until Yom Kippurim, more so than the rest of the year. V'nahagu kulam lakum b'layla b'aseres yamim elu ulehispalel b'bate knesios b'divrei tachanunim b'divrei kivushim ad shi'ar hayom. And all of them are accustomed to get up at night during these 10 days and to pray in the shuls, in words of supplication and submissiveness until daybreak. Okay, that's the minhag of slichos. So there are two problems here with the Aseres Yemei Teshuvah. I'm sure there's more, but two that come to my mind are, number one, it always feels a little bit like an act, you know, that we like get our act together during these 10 days because we know that our judgment's hanging in the balance and that God's judging us and that we better, you know, we better shape up. And that always feels a little disingenuous, you know, like this is not, we all know that this is not really how we are. And, you know, even when we take on halachic strictures, for example, there's a widespread custom to only eat Jewish baked bread, which is a stricture in terms of the laws of keeping kosher, as opposed to eating kosher bread that's baked by non-Jews. And so a lot of people have the custom to only eat Jewish baked bread during these 10 days. And then when the 10 days are up, then they go back to their normal eating habits. So, you know, it feels almost like a little game or like you're, you know, God forbid, like you're trying to fool God. So that's one question. What exactly are we doing by like putting on this increased show of commitment to the system of Torah and mitzvot during these 10 days? The second question is more of a practical question that I always face, which is that you know, it always feels like there's a tremendous amount of pressure to completely change all of your ways and your behavior and do teshuva on everything during these 10 days, and that's impossible, and it's you're setting yourself up for failure, okay? Now, again, I wrote an article this past Friday which might have an answer to that, but I'm not taking that into account here. So I want to answer that as well. So again, the questions are, what is the idea of increasing in tzedakah and good acts during this time? And practically speaking, how do we do teshuva when there's so much to do teshuva on? So I'd like to share an excerpt from the newsletter sent out by Oliver Berkman. Oliver Berkman is the author of the best book that I have read in the last, I guess now it's more than a year and a half, which is entitled 4,000 Weeks, Time Management for Mortals. I have recommended this book to so many people. It is basically, sounds like a book about time management, in the sense of productivity, but that's not what it's about. It's about recognizing human finitude, that you only have on average 4,000 weeks to live, and therefore you can't do everything. And the question is, how do you live with the awareness of your own mortality and make the most out of life? So the author has a newsletter that he calls The Imperfectionist, and he sends it out from time to time. And this is an excerpt from the article he sent out on Friday the 7th, September 7th, 2023. So he says that the main idea is, he says, I excerpted a bunch from this, so there's a bunch of ellipses that I'm not going to read here. He says the main idea is, actually doing something is the only thing that counts. Here's what I mean. Everyone seems to yearn for the productivity technique or life philosophy or set of personal rules that will cause them to do more writing, launch a business, be a better listener, or finally start meditating. But nothing beats actually doing a bit of the thing to reinforce to yourself that you're capable of making progress on it. Even ideas like developing better habits or developing a consistent practice, which sounds so proactive, can be counterproductive if they turn the modest challenge of doing a bit of the thing into the more intimidating one of doing it every day from now on. There's no need to feel confident you'll want to do the thing daily for months. All that's required is that you do one bit of it today. Does this sound trite? I think it's the opposite. In podcast interviews, I'm often asked to name one thing listeners could do to forge a better relationship with time. The subtext is usually, what's one technique to start using, one skill to acquire, one product to buy? But I almost always reply along these lines. Identify some project, activity, or relationship that you know matters deeply to you, but on which you are currently taking no action. Then give it a few minutes of your time today. Not every day, just today. That way you'll feel satisfied you did a bit of it, while also strengthening the muscle of confidence and self-trust that you'll be able to do more of it later. And all that aside, you'll have spent a few moments of your finite time doing something that truly matters to you. Which brings me to one final example of a universal truth made vivid by parenting. This was an article about parenting, by the way, made vivid by parenting and which I write about in 4,000 Weeks. In the end, the reason actually doing things matters so much isn't because it's the right way to raise a successful adult, complete a novel, or achieve some other beneficial future goal. It's because you'll be using a bit of your actual time on the planet to live how you want to live. For finite creatures, this time right now really counts for itself. And it's generally a better use of that time to do things that matter rather than building habits or making plans to do what matters later. An hour I don't spend scrolling through my smartphone might in some small way help my son to live a more focused life, but it's also just an hour I didn't spend scrolling through my smartphone so the two humans got the chance to pay attention to each other instead. Okay, that was more of a conclusion about the parenting thing. So the message he's talking about here is that there's a certain intimidation factor about having these long-term plans and goals, whether it's projects or habits, and then trying to make commitments to stick with these things forever. And he's suggesting that instead of doing that, find a way to spend a small few minutes today doing a bit of that and just make it your goal to do it today, okay? So what do all these ideas have to do with each other? So let's go back to the Marcus Aurelius, all right? Marcus Aurelius wrote, and I'll read it again. He says, to what use am I putting my soul? That's the question to ask yourself all the time. And you should interrogate yourself. At this moment, what is occupying that part of me they call the command center? What kind of soul do I actually have at the moment? Is it the soul of a child, a teenager, a woman, a tyrant, a farm animal, a wild animal? So Marcus Aurelius is really going on this notion that who you are is what you are choosing, is how you're using your bechira, how you're using your free will. And that can change from moment to moment. And the reason why he needs to say this is that there is a fallacy of thinking that there is a core, unchanging, quote-unquote, real self. I gave a shiur on this, and I wrote an article on this called Don't Believe in Yourself. It was based on the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, Chapter 2, Mishnah 4, which states, Hillel Omer, Hillel says, one of the statements he says, Al tamin ba'atzmecha ad yom mosah, do not believe in yourself until the day of your death. So the examples that the commentators give there is that there was a Kohen Gadol who was a righteous man who served as a Kohen Gadol for 80 years, and then in the end he became a heretic. So you never know, don't trust in yourself that you're going to remain in line with your values until the day of your death, because you might always change. But the idea I explained it there is to take the statement literally, do not believe in yourself until the day you die, which means because you're a human being who's constantly making decisions and constantly fluctuating and constantly making choices, there is no self. There's no core underlying self that is a real entity. Rather, you are who you choose and what you choose to make yourself into from moment to moment. And the only time that you could really believe in a self is when you die, because then you could look back and say, okay, well, that's what I was throughout my life. But as long as as the tab is still open, then you still can become other things and undermine everything that you were or completely change whatever you were for the better. So I think that's the message that that Oliver Berkman is making, which is that you might aspire to be a certain kind of person, but aspirations and plans in your head can only go so far, and they're often counterproductive. So if you really want to be a certain type of person, then you actually need to do those things. And in order to do those things, it starts with just doing a little bit of it each day. And he gave an example that actually I recently got back into, which is a meditation. You know, I have made episodes in the past about meditation, and there were times in my life in recent years when I would meditate for half an hour each day. I fell out of it over the summer, and I wanted to get back into it, and so I made the commitment to doing 10 minutes a day, and I got myself a meditation accountability buddy who I report to at the end of the week, and he does the same, and we compare notes on how much we meditated, you know, I could fancy myself, or I could yearn to be a meditator, but unless I'm actually doing it, then I am not. You know, and it doesn't have to be 10 minutes; it could be 1 minute. In fact, that is how I started my exercise routine. I don't remember if I've spoken about this on the Stoic Jew podcast, but basically, I have a really hard time exercising. I managed to employ techniques from Atomic Habits, namely habit stacking, where you take something that you're already doing and then you stack a new habit onto it. So I use that to do exercises right when I wake up. As soon as I put my feet on the ground off of my bed, I get down and I do push-ups, then I do sit-ups, but that was it. But then I, after Pesach last year, I decided to make this into a routine to try to use my elliptical. And I decided that after I do my push-ups and sit-ups, I'll do 1 minute on the elliptical. I did 1 minute. And then the next week, I increased it to 2 minutes, then 3 minutes, then four, and so on and so on and so on. And before I knew it, I was someone who was an exerciser because I was doing it every day. And I only was able to do it every day because I started doing it in small doses. But again, that's already even too much. That's talking about habit formation. He just is saying, just do it today. Okay, just do a little bit of it today. And that, I believe, is what the idea is of the Aseret Yemei Teshuva, or at least an approach to the Aseret Yemei Teshuva. I think if you look at the Aseret Yemei Teshuva and you say, I'm going to use these 10 days to completely do a radical overhaul on my personality and completely change all the bad stuff that I'm doing and all the bad habits that are ingrained in me and become this super person, that you're setting yourself up for failure. And even if you say, I'm going to like set up new habits that are going to last for the entire year, that is also going to be a failure in many cases. But what can you do? You could do one mitzvah. Okay, you could avoid doing one sin. You could give tzedakah every day of the Aseret Yemei Teshuva. You can increase a mitzvah in a small amount. You know, what I think the design of this custom is trying to do is it's trying to implement what Berkman is saying, and by extension, what Marcus Aurelius is saying is it's trying to get you to focus on individual acts that are in line with your values, but evidently, you don't live in accordance with those values year round. You know, you fall short. So what do? Is you choose these little things to do during the Aseret Yemei Teshuva, and that actually makes you into a different person. Because who are you? You are what you do and what you choose. So by making yourself into someone who does a little bit of tzedakah every day, you are now making yourself into a tzedakah giver. You know, by doing one step further in a mitzvah that you have been lax in or that you have not taken upon yourself, then you are moving one step more in the direction of being someone who keeps mitzvos. So I think that's the focus. The focus is not on a radical overhaul of the personality. It's not even on setting up habits that will continue to the future. It's about doing that one mitzvah and realizing that it's those little changes that can shift the entire trajectory of your development in the direction of good or in the direction of bad and can ultimately affect the world. That is it for today's episode. If you have gained what you've heard here, learned here today, please consider contributing to my Patreon at www.patreon.com/RabbiSchneeweis. Alternatively, if you would like to make a direct contribution to the Rabbi Schneeweis Torah Content Fund, my Venmo is at Matt-Schneeweis, and my Zelle and PayPal are MattSchneeweis@gmail.com. Even a small contribution goes a long way to covering the cost of my podcast and will provide me with the financial freedom to produce even more Torah content for you. If you would like to sponsor a day's or a week's worth of content, or if you are interested in enlisting my services as a teacher or tutor, you can reach me at rabbischneeweis@gmail.com. Thank you to my listeners for listening. Thank you to my readers for reading. And thank you to my supporters for supporting my efforts to make Torah ideas available and accessible to everyone.